Okay. Good to be here with you. And if you remember back to last night, we talked a lot about different kinds of sin and how we should rise above all these different kinds of sin. Well, tonight we wanted to focus on one of those sins we talked about last night. And this is sort of a do-it-yourself lesson because I'll be honest with you, I don't have all the answers on this one. This has been a big puzzle to me. So I'm going to tell you a lot of things that I think, and you pick out what you think is good, and you pick out what you think may be the most reasonable to you. I know many of the things we're going to talk about tonight are not going to apply to you because we're going to talk about some kind of gross things, but they may apply to somebody you know, and you can help somebody if you can understand what a spontaneous sin is. So let's quickly get on into this and make more sense of it as we go through some scriptures and some examples. Here's our three questions. Am I guilty of spontaneous sin? How is pride connected to spontaneous sin? And what can I do to prevent it? So those three things ought to kind of raise your interest just a little bit. Just for a little review, different types of sins said a little different way than last night. We know we've got sins done in ignorance. We've got ignorant sins. We've got willful sins. We talked about that, where we know what we're doing, and we're going to do it. Then we have forgiven and forgotten sins. That's the ones we really like because they're gone. We don't have to cringe anymore when we think about those things. Those things of which we are now ashamed, they're gone. Then we have sin and denial. We don't think it's a sin, or we think it's somebody else's sin. And then we have a spontaneous sin. Spontaneous sin may be a combination of a sin done in ignorance and a willful sin. It may be a combination of the two. But first we need to know, what do we mean by the term spontaneous? Spontaneous combustion. We've heard that term. What's a spontaneous sin? According to Webster, the word spontaneous means performing or occurring as a result of a sudden inner impulse or inclination, and here's the two important parts, without premeditation or external stimulus. It just happens. And people get caught by things. It just happens. Like the fellow tried to tell me last night when he was trying to explain his version of living under grace, you might happen to wake up in bed with another woman besides your wife. That he was trying to explain it that way. It just happened. But I think if we have peace with ourselves and we overcome the guilt of sin, we've got to figure out why these things happen and stop them so we don't get caught by things that just happen. Having an open, natural, and uninhibited manner, instinctive or involuntary, of movement or activity in an organism. For instance, they say that the response time of a quail to fly from danger is like 0.02 of a second. It's unbelievable how quick it is. It's almost instantaneous. They stay ready all the time. That's an involuntary response. They can't think as quick as they react. And we humans sometimes have allowed ourselves to be conditioned to sin or different things, and we see an image and all of a sudden our mind takes off on that image where it doesn't need to go. And we feel bad because we've thought about something too much or too long. Something done or said in a natural way, an often sudden way, and without a lot of thought or planning. Doing things that have not been planned but that seemed enjoyable and worth doing at the particular time. That's part of the definition. And I added, beware of internet enticements. There's probably not been a time in the history of the world when so much corruption was at our fingertips as it is on the internet. Anywhere you are in the world, or if you're in your car on top of Chehaw, or if you're in a tent way off somewhere, if you can get a signal at the push of a button, you can bring anything you want from Shanghai or Bangkok or Tokyo or Thailand or anywhere you want to get it from, there is anything you want to see. And sometimes you don't even have to look for it. Sometimes it pops up on your screen and it just says, want to see more? And all you got to do is put your mouse on it and click it, and there it comes. Internet enticements. And sometimes people just kind of drift into these things, and before you know it, they get hooked into this kind of stuff, believe it or not. And before you know it, they get paying a big bill because this stuff is for money. And so not only are they sending their soul down the drain, but their checkbook's taking a hit too. Beware of internet enticements. According to Carolyn, I asked her, and she popped off real quick with just about as good an answer as I come up with. I said, what do you think about a spontaneous sin? She said, it's a sin you don't plan to do. And I spent two slides trying to describe it, and she came up with a one-liner. It's a sin you don't plan to do. It just happened. But my question is, and this is where I want to get to, why. I'm always wanting to know why. Why? What's the very bottom? Where does it get started? Why do we do a sin that we don't plan to do? What is it that's got control of us that causes us to do something that after it's over with, we feel guilty, but we didn't plan to do it in the first place? Now think of it. Why? Well, we know there's different types of lust in the world, and we've got to look at these two because we want to pick up the third one. 1 John 2:16-17, all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof, but he that does the will of God lasts forever. Why is the pride of life put in there with the other two? The first two, I can see them. The lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes. But does the pride of life seem like it's out of place? How does pride fit with the other two? I think one reason it's there is pride wants to keep us in control. Now, we kind of go around in a circle here, but just follow this thought pattern and see if it'll come together. Pride wants us to keep us in control. Pride is a powerful tool to keep Satan in control. One thing that may be at the root of a spontaneous sin is our desire to always be in control of the situation. Anything we can control, we like it. Whether it's our mate, our kids, something about our job. There's people that won't retire because they can't imagine going home and waking up every day without being in control of a crew or an office or a shift of men or a project or something like that. They want that control. They've lived with that control. And they don't want to think about doing without that control. So pride fits in here somewhere. I'm just not exactly sure where. Pride, spontaneous sin, and the natural man go hand in hand. Now see if you can help me figure this one out. 1 Corinthians 2:14. The natural man receives not the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. The natural man, the worldly man, the carnal man. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. Spiritually. With an eye in the Bible. What does the Bible say about this? What does the Bible say about that? How would the Bible judge this thought or this feeling that I'm about to do? Spiritually discerned. There's a part of the natural man that operates off his senses and habits rather than his mind. And that's how people do things that they don't plan to do. They operate off their senses. If we would overcome spontaneous sin, we must be attentive to the lusts around us. If you don't let, I'll just propose this to you. If you don't let lust slip up on you, then how can you do something that you'd be guilty of that you didn't plan to do? If you don't let it slip up on you, If you don't know you're fixing to be in a position to get mad, if you're a person like we talked about last night, that anger was your problem. And we know people have been around people that just fly off the handle. I mean, I've worked around some awful people. I worked around a guy that was a contractor one time, and he was running a bulldozer. And I don't know what he expected, but when he was bulldozing stuff that was hard to push, you could hear him cursing over the sound of that bulldozer. When you get out of the truck, hear that bulldozer running and hear him cursing above the sound, with the sound of the bulldozer coming back to you. Well, I mean, if we get in a situation where we think somebody's about to make us mad, if we're smart people, wouldn't you think we'd be sort of on our toes? And, you know, this guy may push my hot buttons, but I'm not going to let him put my hot buttons today. We've got to be attentive to the lust around us. Maybe this is part of what Paul meant when he said, Hebrews 5:14, strong meat belongs to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. Discern both good and evil. If the natural man operates off his senses, the spiritual man operates off of refined senses, trained senses, senses that are aware of the lust and the potential bad situations that's going on around it. Now, we're going to go through a list right here, and I certainly am not throwing this list up here to say that we have got any of these, but I want you to understand, because somewhere in all this thought process, what have you ever thought about somebody that was an addict? I'm sure you thought about people that was an addict. People that's a drug addict or addict on anything, something they're out of control, an addict of anything. And I'm sure that you've thought, as I have, why? What is it about human nature that causes a person to be an addict of something that's tearing them down, that's destroying their family, that's ruining their finances, that's putting them homeless? What is it about it that's got such a draw that it ruins people's souls through their senses? What is it? Well, I'm just going to go through and just throw a bunch of things out here. And like I said, I'm not pointing any of these things at anybody. Some of these things are way out. But I want us to get a feel. We need to understand these things, because sooner or later we're going to be around somebody that's going to need help with some of these, as I'm going to get to in just a minute. If y'all remember much about that movie that was advertised, and I didn't see it, but this was one of the trailers that Brokeback Mountain, the movie of the homosexual cowboys. And this one phrase that they said, it stuck in my mind. One of them said, "This thing, it grabs hold of us again at the wrong place, at the wrong time, and we're dead." Now, what they were talking about was this strong emotional attraction they felt towards each other, and they knew that all the other cowboys they lived with was so rough that if they ever showed that affection around their cowboy buddies, they'd kill them. And so, but what I want you to focus on is what's underlined. This thing that grabs hold of us. What is that thing? It grabs hold of men and women too, but it's illustrated very plainly here. How do we control it? We as Christians, have we overcome this thing? Do we understand it enough to help somebody else overcome this strong emotional thing that comes on us? And like I said, it happens to men and women. People have office affairs where they work because this thing came over a man and a woman in the office. I mean, there's some strange things that goes on. You just wouldn't believe what happened, that attraction between people. This thing comes over them, and they're not equipped to handle it. And so they give in to it. People can't lose weight, and they want to badly. I worked with two ladies that they were overweight, and they wanted to lose weight. And, I mean, they were distraught. They were upset. And sometimes I felt like it wasn't so much the size they were, is they were upset that they seemed to have no control, because they talk about what they ate and then how bad they felt after they ate it. So it was like a control thing. As I mentioned a minute ago, people want to be in control, and they were not in control, and it was eating them up. And I felt sorry for them. And I could do what I could do, but I didn't know how to get in their head. I mean, we could have started a walking class and all this kind of stuff, but we need to figure out how to get to the root of that problem. Losing weight is a long, steady effort. Losing weight, but to gain, seems to be spontaneous and easy. Think of it. I'm just making an observation. It seems like losing weight takes a great deal of effort. But when we gain, it's just boom, like one weekend of letting go and another 5 pounds. But what is going through our head? Spontaneous. Why is it so much easier to put it in than it is to get it off? The process is what I'm talking about here. What is it in our minds? And, of course, you know what we're going to do. We're going to get around to sin in just a little bit. But I think this spontaneous nature we have, whatever this is, we've got to get a handle on it, or we're not going to get a handle on sin, the sin that causes us a little bit of guilt. People overcome addictions, gambling, drugs, eating. People overcome with addictions, gambling, drugs, eating, sex, shopping. This was very interesting. Read this the other day. People that have gastric bypass surgery then become alcoholics or sex addicts. And remember what happened to Subway's spokesman, Jared. I never even thought of this, but this report came out and he was one of the subjects. He had gastric, he lost all that weight. But then they said one of the reasons that he became a sex addict after that was because he had never cured the addiction. Okay, look at the rest of it. Because the addictive behavior was not addressed. He had addictive behavior. And when it was taken away in the food because of the spokesman he became, he just shifted it over. What is it about the addictive behavior that we just shift from one thing to another? And could it be possible that we could shift this addictive behavior, and don't stop it, but we shifted it over to the Bible? Now, boy, wouldn't that be a win-win situation? That would be awesome. Is that possible? Do you think, is that possible? Can you think of a way to do it? You got somebody close enough to you inside your circle of influence? Remember the little circles? Inside your circle of influence that you could show them enough that they might turn their addiction to the Bible. There was a woman that one of the folks that I worked with, they took a lot of business trips. And she said he said that they had to go off on a business trip somewhere, and I don't know, they may have had it in a casino or there was a casino close by. And one of the ladies that went with them, and he said, because I asked him if she had ever had a gambling problem before, and he said, as far as they knew and as far as she told them, she had never gambled before. And so when they first got to this place for like a 3 or 4 day meeting, they had their money, their expense money, their motel money, their meal money, they gave it all to them. Some of them wanted to go to a casino, so she went to a casino with them, and she started gambling. And before she could stop, she had spent every bit of money she had. All of the money she's going to eat on, all of the money she's going to stay on. And what I want you to think of is what would cause her to do that. Don't just look at it and say, oh, man, that's awful. But what is it that caused it? Because if we can figure out what is it that caused that, we can stop our desire for these automatic, spontaneous sins that sometimes it's hard to really get rid of. There was another story about a woman that was trying to break a gambling addiction, and apparently she played some kind of electronic game that had a jingle to it, and just like a dog being trained to come to the fence when someone rattles the chain on the fence when they're going to bring them food. whenever she heard the jingle of that machine, she just went crazy. And she said she got too excited to enjoy a family meal when she heard the electronic jingle of the gambling machines in the restaurant, in the background of the restaurant where they were eating lunch. She couldn't hardly sit there with her family because of that jingle going off, and she knew what was happening. Somebody was playing those games, and she was hooked on it, and she had an addiction to it. What about a man that was an alcoholic, and when he'd get off the alcohol so bad, he had to drive to work over in Atlanta, and he said it seemed like on every street corner there was a liquor store. On every street corner there was a red light. And when he'd stop at that red light, he'd look through the glass front on that liquor store, and he'd see that liquor. And it does look good, I'll admit to you. I don't drink. But the way they decorate these bottles, they're pretty. They know what they're doing. They know that eye appeal. And they just stacked them on those shelves, so neat and so pretty. You look through that glass and see it, and he said it just tore him up. Just tore him up. Well, what is it? What is that desire? Can we figure out how to break that desire? This lesson is not just about gambling. It's not just about overeating. It's about, can we get to the root of the desire? Can we conquer it? Can we figure it out? Well, what about binge eating or drinking? They've come up with a new disorder. BED. Binge eating disorder. And I don't like it because the definition fits me. It's like if you overeat maybe three times a month. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute now. That's getting too close to home. BED, binge eating disorder. And I've seen these awful things where they show on the college campuses where these kids do this binge drinking. And it just blows my mind, the amount of alcohol they consume. And it's all for show. It can't be for pleasure, because they drink this stuff, it makes them sick. They can drink so much they get an alcohol overdose. It knocks them out. Some of them die. They pour the booze in a funnel in their mouth and it hits the back of their throat. And I think they do it in a way that they don't even have to swallow. It goes down so hard, so they get no oral enjoyment out of it. It just goes straight to their stomach and straight to their system. Why? What is it that causes them to even want to do that? That's what I want to know. Because if we can figure that one out, we can figure out a lot of run-of-the-mill problems. You remember this statement? And what was so funny, this is a simple little old statement, but why did it catch on? I can't believe I ate the whole thing. Some of y'all might not remember that. Was it Alka-Seltzer? I'm not sure what it was, but it was something like that. I can't believe I ate the whole thing. That's got to be one of the dumbest statements that everybody made a commercial. But people understood it. I can't believe I ate the whole thing. You know why people understood it? Because they'd been there. And that's what we're talking about. Spontaneous sin. Whatever causes and brings on these spontaneous acts, if we could figure that out, we could stop a lot of sin. All right, I'll ask you a question. I don't want to show of hands, but how many of you like M&Ms? I mean, I like M&Ms a lot. Dark chocolate peanut M&Ms. A bad thing is to have an open bowl of M&Ms around. An open bowl. If you have an open bowl of M&Ms sitting on your table, you know what's likely to happen? I'm not going to say it's going to, but what's likely to happen? Every time you go by, you get three or four. That's all. Because you don't want to pig out. So you get three or four every time you go by. Because it's right there. It is accessible. You don't even have to go out of the way. You just have to move your hand just a little bit and just get three at a time. See, that's it. But see, because you're only getting three or four, you don't think that much about it. I'm being healthy. It's dark chocolate, that's healthy. Peanuts, those are healthy. The worst part about it's got to be the coating on the outside of it, and there's not enough of that to hurt you. So this is a healthy snack all day long. Until they're gone. But what if you had to walk 2 miles for three M&Ms? Would those M&Ms be a problem? Probably not. Okay, so now we get into it. It's the idea of accessibility. It's right here in front of us. The lust is right here in front of us. And it takes little effort to satisfy it. And so that's part of a spontaneous sin, is it's there in front of us and it's available. Anger, hot temper, family traditions. Sometimes folks go through a family, and I remember a particular person being spoken of having such a hot temper. I didn't know the family, and somebody that was there knew the family, and he said, well, he gets it honest, because that's just exactly the way his daddy was. Family tradition. Sometimes we are trained to react in certain ways. Sometimes we shout, or we pout, or we withdraw. We have physical aggression or withdrawal. It's spontaneous. We don't think about it. We got a hot button and it goes off just like that. Don't think about it. But we need to. But the question is not whether we do it or not. The question is, why do we do it? What is it the cause? Could it be a similar cause to all of these problems, every one of them? Could it be a similar cause? And if we could get our fingers around it and a handle on it, we could do a lot of good. When two people are in a close relationship and both have spontaneous anger, something has got to give. And here's a proposal. The one that ends the madness without involving a killing is the one that gets the reward. Somebody's got to end the madness. And how are they going to end the madness? I doubt they're going to out-mad the other person. I doubt they're going to out-shout the other person. So short of physical violence, somebody's got to calm down. Somebody's got to give in. Because I've seen some almost violent anger confrontations before, and I hadn't seen one of them where one person pushed another person to be calm. I don't think you can push a mad person to be calm. You can pull him, and that's the best you can do. So someone has got to calm down. It'd be the face of reason. The one that ends the madness will get the reward. Perhaps this is what Paul meant. Look at this long passage. Colossians 3:18-23. He talks to the wives first. He says, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as is it is fit in the Lord. Then he says, husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. We used that one the other night. And then he says, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. And then he goes to fathers and he says, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. And then he goes to servants. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. So what does this point to? Okay, maybe I've done a poor job of coming up with the reason all these things happen. I don't know exactly what the reason is. I don't know what the bottom line is. It's just something that we get used to, we get trained to. We want to have control in every situation. We want pleasure, and we're willing to give in. It's sort of like the old little contest that you'd see where someone offers a child a dime and a nickel. And which one do they want? Or they offer them a coin today, but they said, now if you don't take this coin, I'm going to give you 3 coins tomorrow. And the child, oftentimes not understanding, always takes the bigger coin, or always takes the coin today because they can't wait. Maybe we as adults have a little bit of that in us also. Maybe we want it, and we want it now. We don't want to wait for something better. But see, heaven is all about waiting for something better. I mean, we're talking a lifetime. We're talking a lifetime of not doing things that your friends talk about. We're talking about a lifetime of controlling ourselves when our friends exhibit letting go of themselves. We're talking about a lifetime to gain heaven. So maybe that's part of it. But this whole passage right here points to, I think, what, even though we may not know exactly the cause, this is part of the fix. It's discipline. It's doing our job wherever we are. Wives have a job they got to fulfill, and nobody else can fulfill it in that family but them. Husbands have got a job to fulfill, and nobody can fulfill it but them. Children have got a job they've got to do to grow and to understand obedience. Fathers, servants, you name it, we've got a job and we've got to do. And whatever we do, do it as unto the Lord. Get the Lord in on this problem. Okay, so how do I stop? Let's try to hit this just a little bit. All these sins appeal to our desire to practice control in the moment, no matter how trivial. Control is always control. It is its own reward. Now, quickly, let's go into this. All these sins come in a moment in which our brain is not in control, but our senses are in control. And I just call this sensory control. Call it anything. But our senses are in control. Now, think of this. Sensory control. When someone turns on a light when they were asked not to. Now, I don't know if you ever witnessed this or not, but you ever witnessed someone, let's say you're in a room watching TV, okay? Someone comes in and they want to turn a light on, but you don't want them to turn on the overhead light because that glares in the TV. You want a lamp turned on if they want one on. And so just before they touch the light switch to turn it on, you say, "Don't turn that light on," and they go right ahead. Click. And you say, "Why did you turn that on?" "Well, I had already started to." You know what just happened? Their senses were in control. They had already predetermined what they were going to do. The fact that you asked them not to, or that there was even a reason not to, that didn't register. They were under control of their senses. "I'm going to turn this light on, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm programmed already to do it." Just like when you walk by the bowl of M&Ms, you might look at it and make a judgment the first two or three times about how healthy three M&Ms are, but probably more than likely, the next few times you walk by that bowl, you don't even think. It's just automatic. Those fingers go over there and get it. You automatically start the response without even thinking. Your senses have been trained to do that. Why do you think people... How can you just think people can get into drugs like they do and use dirty needles and all the stuff they got to do, and then they stick it in their veins? It's just automatic. Their senses are in control. There's no intelligent logic to it. Can you tell me that there is intelligent logic to what they're doing to themselves? It's their senses are in control. They're under sensory control. When someone keeps speaking, when they need to be interrupted, sometimes people get a train of thought going and they've got so many words they've got to say, and they won't even stop if you try to interrupt them to tell them, "Okay, I agree with you, quit." They're going to say it, and they don't listen to anything else anybody else says. And kids get into video games and get all wrapped up. Sensory control in video games. Can ask them something and they don't even know if you've said anything. Well, what about this? When you scrape the bottom of a bowl of popcorn in your lap and you wonder what happened. Where'd it go? We took the kids to the movie the other day, and I told Carolyn before we went, I said, "We don't need to get any popcorn." Because whether I want it or not, I sit there and I shovel it in until it's gone. Just watching the movie, I don't even think. Just automatic. Automatic. We got popcorn anyway. And sure enough, I sat there and I shoveled it in until it was gone. Hey, but look, we were good. We got very small containers of popcorn. We didn't get the big one. I told her when we went, I said, "I believe if we bought a 5-gallon bucket, I'd sit there and try to eat the whole thing and not even think about it. Just shoveling it in. Automatic, see?" Well, maybe I didn't sin in that, but what about the people that gamble? Is it the same thing? Is it the same automatic stimulation? Is it? Is it that? Are we that close? Are we that close to what causes people to get on drugs and get hooked? When we get caught in automatic responses and we let our senses guide us as well. What does the Bible tell us? The Bible tells us to be sober. And that word sober means to abstain from wine, but it also means be discreet, be calm and collected in spirit, be temperate, be dispassionate. Now, sometimes that's a bad word, but most of the cases that I mentioned to you, if passion were taken out of the picture, there wouldn't be a problem. If passion, if the feeling of passion was taken out of those situations, there'd be a lot less problem. Someone that's circumspect, that looks all around for the lusts that are around us. 1 Peter 5 and 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil is a roaring lion walks about, seeking whom he may devour. Okay, now, I am not trying to make a situation that's dead serious any less dead serious, but I want to make a point, and I want to use a point that may be fresh on your mind, what happened to the little boy that the alligator got. Okay? And I want you to let your mind go into virtual reality. I want you to think and get in this situation. I want you to see that 2-year-old boy being dragged away from his father by an alligator. Okay? Now, from the standpoint of the parents, it's terrible. It's awful. Okay? But from the standpoint of the little boy, that soul just went back to heaven. Okay? That soul, that's one soul the devil's not going to have a chance to get. And that's a good thing. Okay, now, what if that boy lived? And what if he had got mixed up in some bad things? What if his parents had been real upstanding Christian parents? Or what if they were? And somehow the devil got to him. And the devil, as a roaring lion, devoured him. Now, we think it's bad that the alligator drug him back in the water. But you got to get this picture. Peter's trying to tell us that when the devil gets somebody, it's awful. It's gruesome. The devil is not just some slick businessman that wants to slide you a contract like an insurance policy and all you got to do on the dotted sign on the dotted line. No, he's a lion. He wants to eat you up. He wants to devour you. He wants to turn you into a monster so that you can ruin your kids or your friends or you can lead somebody else. He wants to turn you into a demon, a tool, to call someone else to go to hell. The devil's dope. He doesn't play around. It's not fun. Sin is a big deal. Virtual reality. Be sober. Be vigilant. Be sober means be serious. Be vigilant means be watchful, on guard at all times. Be relentless in being diligent against sin. Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, Peter said, 1 Peter 1:13 through 16. Be sober and hope to the end for the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not fashioning yourself, that means we determine what we're going to do and be, not fashioning yourself according to the former lust in your ignorance, but as he which has called you is holy, so be you holy in all manner of conversation. And that word conversation means the way you live, your deportment, the way you carry yourself. Because it is written, be you holy, for I am holy. Well, let's go back to the M&Ms. If the bowl is on the table, it's awfully hard to resist. But if you got to walk 2 miles for them, you're just probably not going to do it. So there's a benefit to simply remove and avoid the stimulation. Do you think this might be what Paul meant in the first two words of 1 Corinthians 6 and 18? It just doesn't get much plainer than that. Flee fornication. Flee it. Don't stand and reason with it. Don't stand and look at it. Don't stand and see how strong you are. Flee it. Flee that temptation. Flee that strong desire. Flee that thing that comes over people. That seems to be so strong at times. It makes people do dumb stuff. I mean, just they do things that just don't make any sense at all. But it's this draw, this temptation, this spontaneous thing. We're to glorify God in our bodies, always like this one. It comes right after flee fornication. Paul said, every sin that a man does is without the body. But he that commits fornication sins against his own body. What? Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you? It's a temple. So you need to treat your body with respect, to give God the respect he deserves, which you have of God, and you are not your own, for you are bought with a price. And we talked about that price of being redeemed, the ransom of the precious blood of Jesus Christ as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. What a price was paid for us to have this glorious temple for God. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Spontaneous sin. Here's our three questions. Am I guilty of spontaneous sin? Well, maybe, if you didn't plan to do it. If there's something that gets you that has got you before. Okay, now last night we talked a lot about willful sin and people knowing they had a sin, but that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about the anger situation last night. We're talking about something that might, okay, honestly slip up on us. Okay, so maybe we can use anger, but not in the sense that I know I'm going to get anger and I'm not controlling it. But sometimes we could just get pushed. We could just get too stressed. We could have external pressures. And we hold it and we hold it and we hold it. And all of a sudden, we don't hold it anymore. And if that happens to us, then that may be a spontaneous sin. Could be a spontaneous sin. We buy something we didn't need to buy. Or anything that makes us feel bad. If we say, I can't believe I ate the whole thing again. That might be a spontaneous sin. How is pride connected to it? Well, I believe that pride helps me feel entitled to what I want. If the M&Ms are in that bowl, they're open to everybody, I got a right to those M&Ms. I'm entitled to those M&Ms. Who is going to tell me that I can't have those M&Ms? That's my right to have those M&Ms. See? And that could apply to anything. Anything that's a spontaneous sin to us. Sometimes we do it because that's our right. We're entitled. That pride comes in. Maybe why pride was listed with the other two lusts. Well, what can I do to prevent it? Think fast. Because you're going to have to be faster than your senses react. Now, I'll admit to you, I have done a poor job. I've raised more questions, but I hope you answered some of these questions in your mind. I don't know exactly what exactly is at the root of why somebody has to have some addiction. Whether it's a food addiction or if it gets transferred over to something else. And I wish I knew, because then maybe I'd know how to turn somebody on with a Bible addiction. That's a wonderful thing. If we could turn somebody on and change it to something else and program somebody to love the Bible as much as they love the other bad things that they do. And I've done a bad job, I know, of trying to get to the root of that problem. But maybe if I raise a question, one of you have got it figured out. You tell me. You'll tell me. But how do we, whether we know the root of the problem or not, the fix has got to be, we've got to stay ahead of our senses. And we've got to be alert to the dangers that's around us. You know, I'm thinking in my mind, if I'm walking along a beach right here, and that black water in Florida scares me anyway, because you don't know what's right under that black water, but they have the black water down there. If I'm walking in the edge of that black water and they've got signs up or all around that says no swimming for alligators, I'd be watching for a set of eyes coming up through that black water. But you don't know how quick it might have been, you know, and maybe you're not even thinking about it. Your mind is off somewhere else. Something else is going on, and I don't know how quick an alligator will come up through the water like that. It might have been so quick that nobody human could react. I don't know that. But we've got to be watchful. We've got to think faster than our senses react. Know what's going on around us. Don't get caught blindsided. Don't get pulled into an angry situation when we've been pulled into it before and we know we're liable to be pulled into it again. So here's our lesson for tonight. Think about these as maybe a do-it-yourself lesson. You'll get out of this lesson what you put into it. So if we can be of assistance to anyone tonight in any way to obey the gospel, will you give us a chance? Let us help while we stand and sing. Stand and sing. Stand and sing. Stand and sing.